Have you ever wondered what impact your travel to wild places has and what you leave behind? I'm Peter Allison, and this is Zebra on a Bike, a monthly podcast by the Natural Selection Foundation, where we have honest conversations about what travel to these wild places takes and what it gives back. In each episode, I talk with safari guides, conservationists, explorers, and thinkers, people who've spent their lives in the wild spaces we pass through, and who believe that travel, done properly, can protect places, support communities, and still change us in the process. Hi, everybody, and welcome. Joining me today is Dr. Jennifer Lally. A doctor is in a PhD, not a medical doctor. I'm sure you do know how to do CPR, but let's stick with your expertise, which is conservation and research. Jennifer is also one of the founders of Natural Selection and the Natural Selection Foundation. She is a director of Natural Selection. She's a mother, one of these incredible women that wears many, many hats. But I want to go back in time a bit to begin today. At one point when you were doing your PhD, you were researching lichens in the incredible skeleton coast of Namibia, and you discovered a new species there. How tempting is it to name that after yourself?
Not at all. Too many people in front of me and too many places in front of me on that list. But very difficult to actually classify and name a new species, especially if it's microflora or microfauna.
No, I imagine so. I was actually being slightly mean. There was an early explorer, William James Burchell, might have been William John. He couldn't resist naming everything after himself, which is why we have Burchell zebra, Kukul corsus, sand grouse, starling, and so on and so on. So well done you for not being that ego-driven. And so I said, we're going back in time a bit here, and I'm going to make time an issue for you. You arrived in Africa 31 years ago, I'm reliably informed. If you could go back those 31 years and meet your younger self, what advice would you give? But to make it more of a challenge, I'm going to give you 1 second for each year that's passed. You've only got 31 seconds with your former self to give her the best advice you'd possibly give. Let's start now.
Okay, number one, be patient. Be patient with everyone, everything, especially with yourself. I would say you would want to make sure that you are not missing nice things along the way. Don't hurry, hurry, hurry. You're not going to change the outcome of things by rushing things. And I would say also, you know, you're going to meet obstacles and they're going to frustrate the hell out of you. But these are often the best guides you have in your life. They are kind of the bumpers in the bowling lane. So pay attention to those. And yeah, watch out for sausage trees.
That was a second late, but it's still a great one. And for anybody who doesn't know what a sausage tree is, it's a fairly common tree along African waterways, and it develops a large, heavy, sausage-shaped seed pod. The rookiest of errors that you can make is to camp underneath one of those. If you want to double down on danger, put your tent up under a fruiting sausage tree right by a neatly cleared path. A hippo will trample your tent before the sausage drops on you to finish you off.
Yeah, exactly.
In your 30 seconds or so there, that was the more flippant part of it, which is, of course, why I seized on that. But I loved the element of patience there. It certainly does get tested in conservation. You've moved from that research role that we spoke about. Now, again, I said wearing many, many hats, so it's obviously not all that you do, but you are part of a group that allocates from the Natural Selection Fund somewhere over $500,000 a year to conservation and community efforts. How is that decided upon?
Yeah, well, thanks for that question. So this year, we actually have gotten to $655,000 that we're donating from the company. And then on top of that, we have a community conservation and reserve fee that we collect from each guest. And then we determine how that's spent too, which would be another $2 million US this year. So it's a lot of money and it's an incredible opportunity to do wonderful things. And we take that responsibility very seriously. So we have a board of independent conservation scientists that help us with those decisions. So with the donated money from Natural Selection, it goes into a Natural Selection Conservation Trust and Foundation, and a board reviews applications. We even have a peer review process that we use for larger applications.
How does that work? Sorry to interrupt you there, but how does the peer review work?
Well, when we get an application, like any other peer review, we choose two people that are in related fields that are not related to the project, obviously, and not going to be biased, hopefully. And we send it out and they have a month to review it for us before our meeting. And they give us feedback on, okay, here are maybe some of the challenges at that project, or doesn't look like it's going to fly if they don't get additional funding, or, you know, different ways of evaluating those projects for success.
How often is your heart broken having to say to an organization or the person that's spearheading it, I'm afraid that these funds are not for you? Because it must be incredibly satisfying to give good news to people, but I'm sure you have to break hearts every now and then as well.
Yeah, we do. I mean, I don't think we're well known enough where we're flooded with applications, but there definitely are projects and programs I would love to be putting a lot more money towards. And a lot of them, sometimes they don't quite fit within our mandate of wildlife conservation, but I feel they're incredibly important. So I do try and find other ways to fund them, and maybe we'll fundraise separately for them. And sometimes our CCR funds can help fund them, but it is really difficult to turn away a project that we think is going to benefit the area. Usually we'll find a way to support it, even if it's logistically, we'll find a way.
Great, great work. Just going back to the allocation of funds, something you mentioned there are existing conservation efforts. You're not setting up things from scratch. You're actually finding work that is being done and supporting that rather than double handling. Is that true?
Yeah, for the most part, that's what we do. So when we're moving into a new area, we kind of identify what the conservation issues are. We speak to the local community. We speak to local conservation scientists. And a lot of people who have their ears on the ground can tell us what's needed, what's actually happening that's working. And if there is work being done on the ground by an NGO or community or government that's really effective, we're going to back it. And so we augment it in whatever way we can with funding, with additional people on the ground, potentially, you know, expanding the program that they're running already. It depends. And then where there's nothing happening, that's where we have to implement stuff ourselves. But more often than not, there's already something there, and there's always wonderful programs and organizations doing the work.
It must be incredibly rewarding for people who've struggled with a conservation or community issue, and those two so very often linked. And then when you swoop in and are able to help them out, because I'm thinking of an example where there was a great idea, there just wasn't the funding, which was up in the north of the Delta. And I'm sure you know what I'm referring to. Come on, Jen, you know it. It's our hero story.
The Elephant Express buses evolved from work that was already being done by EcoExist. It's an NGO in the panhandle of the Okavango Delta. And they were working with the Okavango Community Trust, and they were looking at different ways to assist the community, because there's a community there that falls within five villages. And throughout that area, you have elephants moving through. There are a lot of issues around elephants and intolerance of elephants because of it. And so we have had the opportunity to join forces, and we pulled together resources to put three buses on the road. So we fund them entirely, and they transport children to school who would otherwise be walking up to 10 kilometers to school via elephant highways, which is not ideal. And then we also have the opportunity during the school day to assist healthcare workers getting from clinics to more remote-based clinics.
That's amazing. It's really such an incredible program. And I believe on a later episode, we're going to talk more in depth about that Elephant Express. Coming back to conservation in general, often it feels we're fighting a fire that's already out of control. Is there a looming crisis that you can see? And is there something that you or I or a listener could do right now to stave it off?
Oh, there are so many, and we can be species specific, habitat specific. But if maybe we want to look at the scale of Africa and Southern Africa, what we're experiencing right now, which I see is an immediate crisis, is the loss of funding from the United States. There was a lot of funding, a lot of support of NGOs, nonprofits, whether they were conservation or medical or health or social. So suddenly all that funding was ripped out with very little warning. And so we have areas that were being protected with that money. And so we have to support anything that can continue that work. Tourism is a big one. And what's happening is because of that lack of funding for a lot of these programs, the government have to dip into coffers and they need more money. And so they're going to look at industries that are not necessarily wildlife friendly or habitat friendly. And that is a risk. That's a huge risk. And that's what's happening right now. We have governments from outside of Africa looking at the resources here and they're saying, we can offer you this, but those are not wildlife friendly options. The land uses we want are to do with tourism and low impact industries. So travel to Africa.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, I think you can have a wonderful holiday and be a philanthropist at the same time. And it's something I forgot to introduce you as is your actual work title is Chief Impact Officer. A lot of people, I think, don't understand how that word impact is applied. Could you explain what impact means from a tourism perspective?
Well, it's covering everything we've just discussed. So it's our positive impact in the area. It's the additionality that we bring to the table. So it's not just how we're operating. It's how we can improve the area. What can we do in addition to that? But then it's also minimizing the impact of our operation. So I'm looking after that as well with a great team. And then it's also, you know, the people we employ, just the general presence of our company and what it does for protecting land, which is at the moment 1.2 million hectares that we're helping to look after. And that's important work.
Yeah. So to put that in perspective, 1.2 million hectares, Singapore, which is home to 6 million citizens, is 50,000 hectares. So this is a nation-sized piece of land. Obviously, it's piecemeal, but it's pretty remarkable to be part of something literally so huge. Last question, hopefully an easy one. What's some good news that you can share?
Well, I think there's a growing interest in protecting wild places. And I think there's a growing interest in connecting with wild places and nature. We've seen an increase in ecotourism in Botswana, South Africa, Namibia. We're just catching up to pre-COVID interest. And that's a real positive thing. I think given what's going on in the world, that people are still paying attention to that and craving that is a really good sign. And it's only going to increase. So for me, that's a huge positive sign that people are still talking about nature and wanting to connect.
That's fantastic. Yeah. So ideally, people will listen to this and think they would like to do some good. And it turns out they can have the most amazing holiday, vacation, whatever you label it as, at the same time.
Absolutely. And Africa needs you.
Great. Well, it's a wonderful way to finish. All right. Thanks very much, Jen. And we will speak again soon.
Thanks for the opportunity, Pete.
Thanks for listening to this podcast. When we choose to travel differently, with care and a bit of thought, we get to look after the wild places we visit, strengthen the communities who live there, and still change us along the way. If, after listening, you'd like to help make that difference, you can support the work of the Natural Selection Foundation. Go to www.naturalselectionfoundation.org, or better yet, come on safari.